Hi, I'm Stunning Stella Cheeks.
And I'm the Enigma Erin Klein.
And this is
Not Your Demographic,
a feminist wrestling podcast.
Shockingly, those exist.
Hi.
I bet you can tell we're very enthused.
Thrilled, even.
So thrilled. How are you doing?
Fine.
Okay.
Which is better than last week when I said not good.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
So.
Mm-hmm. You iced down literally as soon as we started recording. And we're like, feeling a little looser. And we're like, oh, we should talk about wrestling. I'm over this.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've been having friendship time for some time talking about how over this we are.
Yeah. Not over you, dear listener.
No, that's the hardest thing is that we still really enjoy doing this, but man, we are beaten down by wrestling right now.
Yeah, and when it's your job to go talk about wrestling, it feels like, wow.
Yeah, and like everyone warned us about this 4 years ago, and we were like, ah, okay, we'll believe it when we see it, buddy, and we believe it now.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm okay.
Outside of not wanting to be doing this right now.
Yeah, I'm okay. I mean, I've been unemployed for a couple of months now, and it's weird that I hit the cross section of it's very nice outside, and I am lucky in many ways that I get to enjoy it, but a lot of people have started giving me shit about it.
That sucks.
Which is like, oh, you're at the beach every day. Oh, isn't your life easy? Oh, you're doing this. And it's like, guys, I'm at the beach because it's free and I have no money. And like, I don't think people are making that connection. Mm. And it's like, okay, yeah, I understand if you look at my Instagram, it's like, I'm out here living my hot girl summer, having the time of my life. But like, I literally can't afford to do anything. And that's why I'm at the beach a lot. I'm the tannest I've ever been in my entire fucking life, which is bizarre.
Tan, red.
My arms are tan. They're not red. They were pink when I walked in because it's fucking hot outside, but I'm not really burnt anymore, thank God. I've been very good about sunscreen this year because I can't afford to do anything else.
All my money goes to sunscreen.
That's it. That's the end of it. Sunscreen and like a 4-pack of beer for $4. Like, that's it. That's all I'm doing. Yeah. I don't know. I've just hit that time. We were talking before we started recording, like, I was also in, like, a manic swing, which is over. So, it is very weird to be, like, back on Earth and be like, oof, man, that was a rough 10 to 12 weeks that I just had. And then, like, there's a lot of great stuff that happened. And, like, I do love being manic because it makes me go do shit that I wouldn't do when I'm depressed. And I had a year where I was depressed, basically. But it's also strange to resettle and be like, whew, okay. Yikes. Yes. I had those first depression months of unemployment, and then I went full mania, and now I'm like, man, I need a job, like, really fucking bad. It's very bizarre. So I'm living a weird life. I also spent a lot of time crying about space the last couple of weeks, because on Wednesday was the 50th anniversary of the successful touchdown of the Apollo 11 mission, so I've just been full in on Apollo 11, basically from the moment that CNN ran the original CBS broadcast feed of the launch day. And so I sat up in the morning and watched it. I just sat for like four hours.
How long was it?
It's like 4 hours.
Okay.
And just wept. Fuck, in a way I did not expect. Like,
so funny.
I cry about goddamn everything, of course. But this, like, this was like, I felt things in the like deep part of my chest that I feel when I'm in love with someone. It was like, deep emotion I could not understand, and it just broke me. I just started weeping hysterically. I was like, I'm just so excited about space, and I'm so sad that we don't. It was weird to hear people on CBS in 1969 be like, and now mankind knows that space exploration is part of our future, and to be sitting where we are now of like, wow, we deprioritize that in a way that is just horrific. And, like, all of that kind of hit me at once. And also, the Mueller testimony happened this week, so I've spent a lot of time feeling very emotional.
I, for somebody Ooh. Who for a long time was like, I only listen to political podcasts.
Really glad you've stepped back from that.
I haven't really listened to any of my podcasts. I've just been listening to audiobooks, which has been audiobooks and then, like, intense music.
Yeah.
To process my feelings. Little recommendation. I know I talked about it a little bit before, but I just finished listening to the audiobook version of His Dark Materials. It's narrated by Philip Pullman, who is the author, who is a great narrator, and then it has a full cast. It's really good. The full cast, His Dark Materials, especially if you're wanting to, like, prep for the HBO show, it's excellent. It's very good. And as somebody who read it, but read it, like, a while ago and wanted to reread it, but I have other things I want to read, like, it was a great way to spend my time.
That's good.
And now I'm
I feel
just...
like we've both really been like, let's go back to books. Yeah. We're feeling sad and feelings, and let's do some books.
Well, I haven't really been reading, because my actual reading
Whatever,
time
man. It fucking counts. I thought for a long time, like, audiobooks are different for some... They're
no,
not.
I meant, like, anytime my eyes are reading something, it is gay angel porn.
That's still reading,
and
though.
Then, like... No, I think audiobooks count as books for sure. Yeah. And then, but I'm listening to audiobooks. So my favorite book of all time, I'm sure we've said this before, is... a book called Solus. It's part of a steampunk series called The Parasol Protectorate. It's got werewolves and vampires and parasols and bustles, and it's frivolous and it's wonderful, and I love it. And I was like, I'm sad. I'm going to listen to my favorite book.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad I have. I've been reading it all day, or, like, listening to it all day, and, like, have just, like, a stupid... And, like, they'll say a line. It's funny to hear some of the ridiculous lines in this, because it is this, like, very, like... frivolous, like, Jane Austen-y type thing, but with, like, werewolves and stuff. It's so stupid. And to hear some of the things said out loud, it's just, like, it makes me laugh at how, like... And when I say stupid, I don't mean that in, like, this is a dumb book. It's not, like, stupid,
no,
like
silly fun.
Yeah, it's not, like, stupid, like, Twilight or anything. Like, Twilight is actually, like, not a good book.
No, it's not.
It's, like, really poorly written and is not good. The writer of this book and the series is really clever and funny and, like...
Gail Carriger. Excellent follow
so,
on Twitter.
And honestly, all of her series that follow this that are in the world are also equally as good. It's
I've
just
never
like,
read any of the stuff past this one.
Yeah, there's a YA series. I think the other two are actually YA series.
I think you're right, actually.
Because Manners and Mutiny is like a prequel and it's set in like a girls finishing school that's also a spy school.
Of course.
It's amazing. The school is in a flying dirigible. It's cool. I love steampunk.
Oh my God.
Okay.
You're such a nerd.
I love steampunk.
I can't really call you a nerd. You're like, I love steampunk. And I'm like, I love space.
Yeah. I love specifically like literary steampunk. And then I haven't read all of the...
You go to fucking TeslaCon like every goddamn year. It's not just written.
Yeah, but
clearly.
I go to one steampunk convention a year. And I'm also one of the like actors there. You know what I mean? I don't... A lot of steampunk people, that is their, like, life, and they, like, dress that way and, like, stuff a lot, and I'm not like that. It is a fun hobby I have, and I really like the books.
Yeah.
I like the books, and I like Scottish werewolves.
Yeah.
If you've read this series, you would understand my deep attraction to Drew McIntyre.
Yeah.
One of our followers actually read it, and she was like, yeah, I get it now. And I was like, right. I mean, Drew McIntyre, for all intents and purposes, is like Conal McCon. Like, he just is. And I'm like, yes, this is basically what I pictured. Correct.
Yeah. I do love, too, that I think it may have been Allie tweeted at Gail Carriger many, many years ago. Many, many moons ago, obviously, for this particular character to be involved in this story. But she tweeted a photo of you in a steampunk outfit at Gail Carriger, and she was like, yeah, that's what Alexa looks like.
Alexia. Also, we've met Gail. We went to TeslaCon for the first time to meet Gail Carriger because we were like, we love your book so much. Mm-hmm. And, like, she had, like, tea with us and was, like, very nice. She's really great.
Yeah.
And also her books.
She's very funny.
And her books are, they're so, like, good and silly and, like, I love them. Yeah. And so I've been listening to the audiobook. And it's so funny. I was telling Aaron, this is, like, my favorite book. I've read it many times. I've made so many other people read it. But you know, you say certain names away in your head, and then to hear it said out loud, one of the characters in the book is pronounced totally different in the audiobook, which I assume is like the real version, because like I'm sure Gail Gerger was like, yeah, like this is how you say this. Yeah. And I was like, oh, what now?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, who what?
I was also very surprised.
But it does like a foppish gay vampire. Mm.
And of course.
It also like is a lot more musical and like it sounds better the way she says it than when I say it. But like now I'm like trying to like rewrite that history in my head, like, oh. Akildama. Anyways, you should read these books. They're stupid and I love them.
They're very good.
They're so good.
I also
And when you read them, just imagine me as Alexia Terabody and Drew McIntyre as Conal McCann. It might get weird because there are sex scenes, but please just do that for me. Oh, spoiler alert, I guess. They glad. Fuck.
Clearly. You're into this book. Clearly there's fucking involved at some point.
So, yeah.
Pizzazz was the lady, what's her name?
The lady inventor?
Yeah, Pizzazz is the lady inventor, and then I was the lady werewolf.
Oh, yeah. Who matters in Mutiny, she's a main character
what?
In that,
I didn't
but
know
as
that.
A young girl.
I didn't know that.
It's actually super fascinating. Super good.
I really liked her a lot. I was like.
You are absolutely her.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Except for, well, that is a big spoiler. There's one thing that I would be like, I don't know, but.
Fair.
Yeah, so, you should definitely read Manners and Mutiny. There's a ton of like crossover characters, but she is one of the like students.
Okay.
And is in the like, you know, Harry Potter like mischief-y gang.
I did not know that. Okay, I should read those then. I need something that's like light for that after reading. Astronauts Wives Club is what I'm reading right now, which is fucking great. But man, as I'm sure you could guess, reading about all the space wives of the original program.
Space wives.
Like, yo. Dark. The first man that was killed in the program was killed because there was a pilot's accident. It wasn't actually like a space shuttle. He was flying a T-38 that he crashed. And the way that the wife found out is a reporter showed up to her door and was like, hey, do you have any comment about how your husband's fucking dead? And she was like, what? I'm sorry? And NASA like didn't call her. They didn't tell her that this had happened. Like, it was really fucked up. And you can see why the Astronauts Wives Club, it's a real thing. It's like the Navy Wives Club that all of the astronaut wives, they have like a phone tree if something happens and they're...
Is that still a thing?
I think so. Yeah, I'm almost positive. Because it's sort of like like I was saying, the Navy Wives Club where it's like your husband is, and or wife is
especially
gone.
Like back then where it's like a lot more like... The households are, I depend on this person.
Right.
I don't have a job.
Absolutely.
The mortgage isn't in my name.
Absolutely. And hearing what that's like and a huge part of the program too for the original missions from Mercury and Gemini friendship and then into Apollo was if you don't have a good at-home life and you don't have a perfect textbook marriage, you don't go into space. And so there's this huge pressure on all of these women to present in this way and to be acceptable. And like, I didn't know that, John Glenn's wife, Annie, had a horrific stutter. And so when LBJ came, like, tried to come to her house one day when a mission had been scrapped that John was supposed to go into space, she was like, no, I can't. You can't bring a bunch of networks here to just talk to me about how I'm sad about my husband not going to space. First of all, I'm not sad because he's not going to die now. And also, I cannot say four words without stuttering, and then that will hurt his chances to go back into space. So it's really interesting to read those things back and forth and, like, to read about the first divorce and what happened to the first astronaut who got divorced and, like, the backlash from NASA of that. Fascinating. It's so
good.
It's really, really fucking good. And, like, to read about... Because you think about it now, and it's like, of course you would think... We need to make sure these families are told in a way. We need to give them access to know that these things are happening. And, like, they didn't think to, like the squawk boxes. They had, like, access to the mission control to the missions that were up in space. They could, like, they could eavesdrop, basically, on what was happening in their telecommunications. So the women were, like, aware that their husbands were alive, basically. And so to read about that... They just didn't do that at first. It's so bizarre to think like, oh yeah, well duh, we just didn't know that like psychology was important basically and like trauma is a real goddamn thing. And like a bunch of astronauts had kids that died and they just never addressed it. They were like, we'll just never speak about how our daughter drowned in our pool in the backyard. Cool, time to move on. That's Neil Armstrong, by the way. Did you know that his daughter died before he went to the moon? I didn't. So like... It's fucked up. The whole thing is fucked up. It's very fascinating. So I really recommend Astronaut Wives Club, but like also be prepared that it's fucked up. It's Yeah. So, NYD Book Club Summer Reading List. I highly recommend this. It was very, very good. Michael's reading Failure is Not an Option. Gene Kranz was the mission control director during the Apollo 1 explosion, and he gave the famous speech about we have to be hard on ourselves, we have to believe in our integrity, and we have to not give a fuck if we sound like assholes, basically. Because Wally, oh my god, what's his last name? Sheeran, I think is... No. I think it might be Wally Sheeran. The day before the Apollo 1 explosion was like, this is not safe. And I don't think that this is going to go well. I don't think this thing can go to space. But didn't say anything because he was worried that NASA would pull him from the flight list because of the whole idea of you have to be perfect. You have to be a textbook person. And if you complain, that means you go to the back of the line, basically. And then the next day, three astronauts are killed. And like, how do you deal with that? How do you live through that? And how is those wives do you live through that knowing this person knew something and didn't say it because of this? And so Michael's reading this book, Failure is Not an Option, and I'm reading this other book, and we both sat down on the couch and we're like, oh. Oh, you're a nerd too. You
should trade books when you're done.
That's what he said. He was like, oh, because he didn't know, he'd never heard of Astronaut Wives Club, and was looking at it, was like, oh, is this just the Mercury 7? And I was like, no, bitch, let's talk all about how great this is. And it was nice to sit down and be like, oh, we do have a lot in common. We're weird and have very different lives, but like, oh yeah, that's right, we do both love space, and like, the Kennedy Space Center saved our relationship many years ago. Like, we're weird.
Every couple has their thing.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Shakespeare book club that's just me and him right now.
I love it. It's so cute.
Yeah. Saturday is our 3-month wedding anniversary, and we're watching the Meryl Streep Taming of the Shrew documentary and the Elizabeth Taylor Taming of the Shrew, and then we're going to go to dinner.
Cute.
Our little
that's so cute.
Not that we should be celebrating 3 months, but Nick was like, do you want to go to dinner? And I was like, sure. Do you want to watch Taming of the Shrew?
Nice.
Also, that Meryl Streep Taming of the Shrew documentary, I kind of watched most of it already because it was so good. It's all available on YouTube.
Oh shit, okay.
It's really good.
Cool.
Raul Julia is Petruchio and is maybe my favorite Petruchio.
Legit.
Really good Petruchio.
That's super legit.
Super good. Okay. I'm very excited to not be reading Taming of the Shrew, though. Excited for it to be August.
What are you guys reading next?
Othello.
Bitch! Why don't you guys pick a comedy?
Because we're going to see Othello, Merry Wives, and Henry VIII in September.
So why didn't you pick Merry Wives?
Because we're going to read that in September. Technically, Taming of the Shrew is a comedy.
It's fucking not!
Also,
Measure for Measure is a comedy.
I'm super shocked that there hasn't been a huge resurgence in Measure for Measure in, like, this Me Too culture.
Bitch, I fucking know. I did it. I performed it in 2006.
It seems like the most obvious thing to do, right? Like,
13 years ago that I was in that show. That's fucking bananas. But yeah, it's, like, the perfect show to bring back now. And also, like, the only way to interpret it is politically. Like, there's almost, like, Julius Caesar is hard because it's obviously super fucking political, and like, it's really hard to interpret it in any other way other than the like military industrial complex now in like a modern lens. You can set it other times and do other things with it, but if you're making it modern, it's really hard to like get away from that. And I feel that same way where it's like, man, I wish it was, can we do it any other way?
I don't know. I think there was somebody that I was looking at that did Measure for Measure last year, like a big company. I'm just surprised it's not being done more because of, like, the moment of history that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
I think people forget about that one, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. It's been so largely disregarded because it's weird and not a fucking comedy. It's only it's literally only considered a comedy because there's a wedding at the end. And it is a fucked up wedding that is dark and terrible and, like...
Yeah.
Ooh, man. A lot of rape in that play for a fucking comedy. So I think that's a huge part of it is that people are just like,
but, like, if you do it now, you don't do it as a comedy, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm actually very excited to read Othello. And I'm excited to read...
It's a good show, but, like, I don't know. It's one of those ones that I feel like it's overdone so much that I never go back to it, even though it is very good. So well,
that's part of reading the canon.
I know
and that. Also reading things around it, and that will be interesting to read and listen to things about, you know, the racial aspect of it and, like, how it's done and, like...
Yeah. There's so many different, like, reinterpretations of the racial element, too, that I find very interesting.
Sucks.
Yeah, she does.
Except for that line when she's dying, when she was like, she kind of is just like, bitch, I'm totally innocent. You can kill me, but I am dying with a clean conscience. You're going to be the fucked up one. dead.
Yep.
That's a baller way to go out, to be like, making a huge mistake, bro.
I'm fine. Goodbye.
I know that's like not the delivery, but yeah. Might as well be.
I mean, that's close enough.
She's just so, like, a lot of the times the, like, heroines, like, I don't think Ophelia is dumb. People play her dumb. I do not think that she is dumb.
She's dumb either.
Desdemona is actually dumb. She's one of the ones that I'm like, yeah, you're dumb.
I don't know if it's necessarily dumb that I would describe her as. I totally see what you're saying. I think that part of it with her is that, kind of like Kate, she's so broken by the society that she lives in that, like, she's just accepted that that's as smart as she's allowed to be. Like, I think that's a more interesting way to do it.
I feel like her in a very hero way where I'm just like, you're dumb.
Well, see, I feel that way about Hero, too, where it's like, Hero, you're a fucking idiot in so many ways. But then to, like, at the end, it does take a lot of moral, like, fortitude to be like, I'm gonna fake my own fucking death because
Hero is not a good example. Desdemona sucks.
Yes. Again, in, like, a hierarchy of idiots, like, yeah, she's pretty much at the fucking bottom. But I also feel, I do think that it's, part of it is the context of the time and the character. It's so hard to look past that in Shakespeare, but, like, she's one of those characters that I feel like, if it was written now, it would be similar, but I feel like the context for why she is the way that she is.
There are so many women who are written, and it's clear, like, Shakespeare wrote them knowing that a dude would play them and, like, gave them a lot of depth that, like, maybe people didn't believe that women had this depth back then and blah, blah, blah. Desdemona is one of the characters I feel like, yeah, she's a woman of the time. Yeah. She's just a woman. There are not many layers.
Yeah.
Maybe I will feel differently at the end of July.
Yeah, I'm excited to see this, like, supplementary material that that you guys are, like, reading about Desdemona specifically, too. Because there's so much written about Iago and
well, that's the hard thing about finding certain stuff. Like, we haven't talked about Rosalind at all. Who cares?
More interesting character, and so it's easier to read that.
No, the hard thing about reading about finding stuff about Shrew is it's all written about Kate, and it actually pisses me off because there's not a lot written about Petruchio, and I don't know why there's so much written about, like, no, this is why this is a love story, because, like, she acquiesces and, like, blah, 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 but there's not, like, I can't find barely anything written about Petruchio. Like, he's, like, a con man. Like, why don't we talk about that? Is he a bad guy? Is he a good guy? Like, does he, like, no, I just haven't found a lot written academically or otherwise about him, because it's always everybody jumping through hoops to try to justify this fucking thing and doing it from Catherine's perspective. And some of the hoop jumping, I'm like, yeah, no, that makes sense to me. But
I have a question, since you're reading it and you can probably give me a better answer for this. Does Petruchio ever, when he's talking to Kate, use the thou tense? Because that's a huge part of Shakespeare, is that those words mean very specific things. I read a bunch of papers about this in college too, so that's part of the reason that I'm curious about it. Because, like, for example, in Much Ado About Nothing, thou is used in two different ways in this time contemporarily. Thou is either used as something that you say to someone that you love and you're very, very intimately close with, or you use it as an insult to people who you're like, thou art fucking stupid. Like, that's kind of the idea. And so
fucking stupid.
Yeah. And so that's the whole idea, is that because you use it in an intimate way, when you're using it as an insult, it's like, it's even more cutting to be like, I'm referring to you in this intimate way because you're a fucking idiot. And so in Much Ado About Nothing, immediately, as soon as Benedict hears that Beatrice is in love with him, switches to thou tense and is like, thou art so beautiful. Thou do this, that I feel this about thou. I feel this about thou. And Beatrice only says it once. And it's in her soliloquy where she's talking about if thou love, love on. And it's like the only time she refers to him in an intimate moment. So I'm curious about the vows that are used inside of Taming of the Shrew between Kate and Petruchio.
You know, I would have to look back. I would have to read it again, which is actually quite short, so it's, like, easy to do that. But, I mean, the first time he sees her, he uses a nickname of hers. And, like, the first word is, he calls her by Kate, like, six times. And then she's like, my name's Catherine. And he's like, no, bitch, your name is Kate. And, like, that's a whole thing about it where he, like, the moment he meets her, he dresses her down. And then, like, at the end, he uses her, like, full name.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, like, addresses her in a different way. And there is a shift in their relationship. Like, the scene right before they go to the banquet or whatever for her sister, where he, like, asks for a kiss. But it's, like, not... it's not written in the same way where he's, like, being a dick to her. Like, so that's where a lot of people's conjectures about, like, no, there's, like, this love shift, because that scene is, like, very more indicative of, like, the romantic scenes than the scenes where, in all of other Shakespeare, than the scenes where he's, like, that dress looks dumb. Do not eat this meat. Do that sun, that's the fucking moon. Like, those scenes are different than, so, like, there is, like, a shift language-wise, but I don't remember.
Yeah, I'd be curious.
It's, like, that one. But, yeah, I guess I totally forgot about that. You're totally right.
It's something that I think about all the time, because it's so specific to that time period, and it's just language we do not fucking use anymore. And it's very important to the text in many places in Shakespeare, because he assumed, like, oh yeah, duh, of course you'll know that this is, like, a formal term that you only use in these two different places. And now today we're like, thou's just a word you use to sound fancy. And, like, no, it means really specific things. So I'm really curious, like, when you continue reading and watching more about it, if you notice that, like, I'm really curious about that. Because I feel like that might support the theory more or less about, like, are they actually in love? Is this a real thing? Or is it, like, is he a con man who's putting this front on? Is she accepting this and using this language too? Or is she not using this language in the end? Because I don't remember, truthfully.
And there's some stuff in her final speech too where she's like, women are made to be, like, obedient and whatever. But there's a bunch of stuff where she's like, because men do all of this stuff for you. Right. And, like, I now start think of, but, like, it's, like, almost like a, I read one thing where it's, like, it's almost like a threat where she's, like, I will do these things for you.
Yeah.
I'm saying this out loud in front of everyone. I will do these things, but you are expected to do all of this stuff. And then there was this, like, funny thing in the Raul Julia one where she says something about, like, essentially, like, go to war and die. And he was like, oh, I don't know. And she was like, yes, correct. You will do this. They have such good chemistry. Ugh, they were great together. But also, we never see Kate and Petruchio's marriage because he, like, doesn't show up. And she has her whole monologue where she's like, fuck all of that. And then, or like, fuck him. He, like, and then she storms off. Then he comes in and they have, like, a shotgun wedding. And then they leave, essentially. We never actually see their wedding. Yeah. We just see the before where she's crying and he shows up in, like, weird pantaloons. And I have started to, like, think of her final speech. Again, I keep going back and forth. But I've been starting to think of her final speech as a wedding vow. People say fucking weird things in their wedding vow all the time.
Yes, like, they fucking do.
Like, I give my life to you. You own my life. Men and women say stuff like that in their wedding vows. And if you think of it as, like, a wedding vow, it takes a different... And then she literally, like, gets down on her knees. And in most productions, like, he either gets down on his knees too or picks her up. And that's, like, a response to a wedding vow. I don't know. I think it really works if you think of it as a wedding vow.
Yeah, I can see them kneeling together, that it would work as a wedding vow. Like, that makes sense to me. I can see that clicking. Interesting. I really like that you guys are doing this, because it means I get to talk about Shakespeare way more, because I have no one else to talk to about this.
What wrestling shirt are you wearing?
I'm wearing a shirt that you gave me a couple of days ago that says, hi, my name is Kikyo. I'll Kikyo your ass. Honestly, the only reason I'm wearing it is because it's really fucking hot here today, and I wanted to wear a tank top, and I just wore the Sasha Banks one on the show. And the only other one I have is one that you gave me, and it's an EC3 one that you turned into a muscle shirt, and it's not appropriate to wear in public.
It's a cool shirt. Kikyo's a cool wrestler.
Yeah, I like her a lot. I know that she's been injured for a long time and, like, hasn't been around as much, but, like, I really like her, and I hope she comes back strong. Like,
well, yeah, and it plays into the things that we're talking about, where we're like, we wish we could just talk about Rise and, like, things like that, but it's also, like, harder to see, more inaccessible, not on weekly TV, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's the stuff, you know, in this, like, wrestling burnout, like, that's the stuff that we get excited about.
Yeah.
But it's just, like, you know, different.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been weird. I went to a baseball game the other day with some friends, with another couple friend of ours, and he was asking me about wrestling because he like sort of follows it and was like asking about the podcast and what we're talking about because he knows I'm boycotting. And he even was like, man, it seems like it sucks that you guys have to do this all the time. I'm like, yeah, it does. It truly fucking does.
We just talked about Shakespeare for half an hour.
Yeah, well, I mean, congratulations, everybody. This wrestling part is going to be short, probably. did you watch any of the...
You're not going to ask me what I'm wearing?
Oh, yes. What are you wearing? I just assume you're not wearing one because you never wear one anymore. I know that you are, actually. I can see it.
Remember last week when I bought a Kevin Owens shirt? Well, yeah. I'm wearing that Kevin Owens
shirt. Fuck yeah.
Okay, WWE has a lot of problems with their merch. Obviously, like, most of the designs are terrible.
Did you see that their merch sales are down almost 20% in the last quarter?
Yeah, because most of the designs are bad. This one is actually
pretty good.
It's good. And the back says, fight everyone. And I love yellow. And so, like, I actually got a lot of compliments on it from, like, non-wrestling people. And I was like, okay, sure. Mm-hmm. They did change their, like, cut. And their, like, new women's cut fits so much better.
Good.
I put this on and I was like, this does not feel like a WWE shirt. This is, like, softer and a better cut. Hmm, that's nice.
Yeah.
Also, that I Love Mania shirt fits and is really, really cute. On the website, there is not a WrestleMania logo on it.
Where is it?
I'll show you. It's, like, small. It's white. And it's just, like, on the, like, bottom corner. I'm going to black it out.
Oh, fuck yeah. Put a patch over it.
And I went back to the website and I went, it's not on this.
No.
This is false advertisement. An I Love Mania thing is way funnier if there's no WrestleMania thing. I know that their intention was not to be funny, but, like, that's why I bought it.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm also wearing an Evolution hoodie. Oh, hey. Not Evolution, the shitty stable, but Evolution, the
pay-per-view they'll never do again because they did one.
The glorified house show that they did.
Man, it's funny here to hear funny in a, like, I'm very angry way. To hear so many people be like, man, that was my favorite pay-per-view last year. It's too fucking bad they're not doing it again. Like,
we went to Long Island to see that.
Yeah, we fucking did. It was the last thing that I watched as a regular WWE program. Like, I've been watching stuff because I've been pirating it, but, like, that was the last thing that I, like, really put the effort in, because a fucking week later was their second Saudi Arabia show, and so I stopped watching after
that. Wasn't a week later their first one?
No, it was their second one. Their first one was when I was in Germany. That's why I watched it, because it was on at the same time. Yeah. I happened to be in my home at the time that it was airing.
Oh yeah, because the murder happened.
Yes,
it wasn't. You weren't always boycotting Saudi Arabia, Saudi Arabia deal. It was like, okay, yes, I remember now. The timeline.
Yeah, the timeline is they cut a journalist up and we're like, LOL. Yes. He fell on a bone saw 100 times.
Can you imagine saying that as an excuse? Like, no.
These people just showed up and had bone saws. Weird. I'm sure that's coincidence.
Nuts.
What? What wrestling shit do you want to talk about? Actually, did you watch the TNT announcement of AEW?
No.
It's going to be on from 8 to 10 on Wednesday nights on TNT.
8 to 10 Eastern?
I believe so, yes.
So 7.
Yes. So 7 to 9 for us. Yeah, it was pretty good.
Is it an hour or 2 hours?
It's 2 hours.
I was hoping for an hour.
Part of what they said, I mean, 2 hours is fine for me. That's
yes, I know, but I'm just like, an hour is about as much as I can do.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that.
That Raw reunion, I was just, like, staring at the clock. Like,
when will this be over?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, part of what they said on the TNT announcement is, like, this is not sports entertainment. It's a fucking whatever product. And, like, okay, cool. Like, it's different, and I'm glad you guys are marketing it different than the, like, superstars of WWE. But also, like, what are your storylines going to look like? I'm really interested in that. Like, didn't make me hype for them in a way that I was anticipating it would, but it's just nice to have another step. I think, honestly. And especially coming at the exact same time as the Q2 call for WWE, which was a fucking mess. Did you read any of this?
No, I've been listening to books about werewolves and vampires and sex.
Well, here are the highlights.
Are there gay angel storylines in WWE?
No, there are not. And there
then
should
I
be.
Will not be doing Here's... anything outside of the main things that I have to do.
Here are the highlights that work? From these calls. That's Sorry. A great question. That's a great
Somebody
question.
Somebody write that fanfic.
Hey.
Somebody write a fanfic where Crowley takes Aziraphale to a WWE or to a wrestling match and their reactions. Please, I need it.
That doesn't exist?
It might, but Crowley's
it's a
like...
It's a bunch of half-naked... Mostly naked men wrestling each other in front of gangels.
Yeah, but, like, obviously, like, they saw wrestling and stuff in, like, Roman times because they're very old, 6,000 years old.
That's
I
the
want
whole deal.
Crowley to be like, hey, Angel, let's go watch wrestling. And for Aziraphale to be like, oh, like we used to do. And then be like, this is not what we used to do. What is happening?
Yeah, that's great.
I'm not going to write it. Somebody else write it.
That's your NaNoWriMo this year.
I tried to do NaNoWriMo whilst being in school. It doesn't
Horrific.
Work.
I don't know why I thought you could do that.
Do you need my vampire book?
That should be a Patreon exclusive.
No.
At a $20 level. You have to pay a lot of money to get it.
It's not And then as I was thinking about it, I was like, oh, this is another book. This is a book that I read. And I've just tweaked it a bit. And it's not as good, obviously, because I'm not a real writer. And like, oh, I'm just pirating this book. Whoops.
I mean, Twilight's a very popular series.
Yes, but it wasn't.
That's literally what it is. Oh, no. I'm sorry.
That's Fifty Shades of Grey
is the pirated version.
Twilight is from a dream. She had a dream one time and was like, vampires.
You know what? Get it.
But it's also like a really basic vampire story. Like, so you had a vampire dream and then you just wrote. There's nothing complicated about that book.
I think
at all.
The thing that she had the dream about is that they sparkle in the sun and they don't die. Like, that's kind of the only deal.
Well, I mean, yeah. And then also, you know, the like, he's so romantic and protective over her, i.e., he's a stalker.
Ugh, and abusive. Ugh.
I did read a fan fiction where a duck imprinted on Crowley.
How dare you?
They named him James. It was very cute. Not all of the ones I read are porn. Some of them are just weird and sweet.
That's emotional porn. That's not that different, to be honest.
And Aziraphale made a whole Instagram for them with the duck.
What's wrong with you?
His name is James.
My uncle's name.
Is he a duck adopted by gay angels?
He is gay and worked at Disney and played a duck.
Yeah, that's basically it.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing, truthfully.
Oh my god.
Oh man.
I like that my life right now is crying about Hamlet, reading very dirty gay angel sex, like sex and porn, and listening to a weird steampunk book. and rewatching all of Doctor Who. These are my emotional selves.
Girl, I'm reading about space and crying about the X-Files. I watched several episodes of the X-Files. That's when I realized my mania had ended, because I was like, oh fuck, I just watched 4 episodes of the X-Files. Oh no. Oh no. I'm sure Michael too was like, oh fuck. He went to bed at like 8 o'clock last night and I was like, guess it's time to watch a bunch of X-Files. It was weird. I was watching it and like half drunk, high tweeting through it, and got to a point where I was like, I tweeted, I'm sure a lot of these feelings I'm having aren't about the X-Files, and then read the tweet back and was like, oh fuck, these aren't about the X-Files.
My feelings aren't about Hamlet.
Nope.
Just identify with Hamlet newly in a way that I didn't before. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I identify with Scully in a way that I never did before because of the way that she weirdly controls their relationship, and I'm like, oh, is this a problem I also have where I need total control over everything that's happening? Weird. Super, super weird.
What did the Q1 call go? Q2 call?
Q2 call. So, our favorite, buddy boy Seth, who cannot shut his motherfucking mouth. I swear to God. This man, starting fights with Will Ospreay, talking shit on the internet. Over this call, he starts talking shit about Jon Moxley and how Jon Moxley's taken dinner off his table and how it's just so disappointing that John went over to this and felt that he had to do that. And like, part of it I know is like kayfabe, but also bro, like, no, this is, you shouldn't be the crony who's saying this. This feels especially fucked up that you're the one that has to be the mouthpiece for this. Like, he was your friend. And
but like,
bizarre.
Wasn't that thing where like Dean was like, Roman is my brother and my friend and Seth and me work together.
But they like, we're friends. There's that, there's a documentary about Dean where you see Renee interacting with Seth backstage. Jeans? And so I feel like there was a time where they were friends, and it does not feel like that is the case anymore. And it was very weird to hear Seth just like wild out about it basically and like, yo, bro, this is not a good look for you. You gotta back off on this shit. Like, I understand you're a corporate crony now, but this makes you look bad, like, in a way that is weird. And we were talking earlier during our friendship time, all this shit makes me hate Seth Rollins. Like, I really dislike him right now.
I would sell my soul to get heel Seth Rollins back. I just want to hear the laugh.
It's just,
he's a terrible babyface. And, like, it would be one thing if he was, like, sucking on corporate dick and being this douche on the internet and was
and
doing
a heel.
Or, and was doing good work.
Yeah, truly.
But he's not.
Yeah. It's, so he's
remember
doing,
when we were so excited that he had the Universal Championship back? And, like, I'm not shocked that they gave it back to Brock. Like, obviously, no. Obviously not shocked because, like, they always give it back to Brock. But also, like, I kind of see why.
Yes, that's a weird fucking champion and, like, doesn't... Well, part of it is that the Universal title has no prestige on it because Brock disappeared with it
for so much. Put some prestige on it!
Put a prestige on it! Hipsterfy it. Put some prestige on it! Put some birds on it. It probably would have more prestige than it would be like, fancy!
I like that you took it as the, like, put some birds on it, and I took it as, like, some... Put, like, some respect on my name is what I was saying. Put some prestige on it.
Oh, no. Definitely thought about birds. so that's part of what happened during this Q2 call. And then the other thing that just, like, blew my fucking mind. So Vince actually brought up our competition. So this feels like we're fully in now. That he's acknowledging this in, like, shareholder meetings. That means that they are fucking worried. That is not a step that he would be taking if he was
They
not.
Just did a random Raw reunion for ratings.
Yes, exactly. The ratings have just been fucking tanking. Their merch sales have dropped almost 20% in Q2 because it's all goddamn garbage.
Hire fucking graphic designers.
Let your fucking wrestlers commission their own art and, like, let them... They will do it. Anyone who has worked in the indies before already knows how to do that shit. So many of these wrestlers already know how to make this shit happen. Just let them fucking do it. But so, Vince in Q1 uses the excuse that our ratings are down because so many of our superstars are absent. There are 18 of our superstars who aren't on TV. Literally only one of those people was so injured that they were not on TV at all in Q1. And so now in Q2, he has no fucking excuses. And so he starts talking shit about AEW, basically, and is like, we're not going to be doing any of that bloody stuff that one of our competitors did recently. We're not going back to that dumb gore stuff. We run a sophisticated product.
LOL.
Exactly. Where it was like, you just did a close-up on Lacey Evans' ass, and it wasn't even a good joke. And also, Drake Maverick's whole running storyline is he doesn't fuck his wife.
You also just brought back a bunch of people to just stand around.
Exactly.
Rob Van Dam came out in wrestling gear and just was high as hell and pointed at himself and then just stood there.
Yeah, like...
Which was awesome. That part was funny. Because I mean, Rob Van Dam was like, I wore for him back, whatever.
Fuck it. So I think that's part of it is that it's like, why are you talking shit? And then...
Why are you talking shit?
It's the same thing as I felt about Cody, where it was like, why are you talking shit? Why are you bringing attention to people who are doing things better than you in many ways? Are not doing things better in other ways, but like, why are you bringing attention to this? And it really feels like a panic move to be like, well, our competitors do this. Y'all never had any competitors, and the fact that you're acknowledging this on an open call to your shareholders is a bad sign for you guys, like, real bad. And so it's interesting to hear him talk about, like, we're a sophisticated product. Like, bitch, no, you're not. You're the only one who has any idea what these storylines are going to, and that product looks confusing every fucking week on TV.
How can you be sophisticated when you have Maria Kanellis just, like, yelling at her husband?
That
and
he's
being
a
like,
bitch, yeah.
And not even in, like, a fun way. In, like, yeah. The most, like... obvious, stupid, I'm pregnant, you're a loser, get me pickles and peanut butter.
Yeah.
It's not even like...
He said at the beginning
of the call...
It's
not even an interesting cuckolding.
Yeah, truly, like, get it together. There are so many more rich and diverse cuckold stories you could be telling. So it's like... I think it's very frustrating to see that Vince understands that things need to change, but, like, wholly misunderstands what that is going to be like. And like you said, the Raw show was... It is very frustrating that it was a 3-hour long show that had a woman's segment. Like, the women were built.
No, there were a ton of, there were women segments.
There were women included in things, but it didn't feel like it.
There was a lot of women on the Raw stuff.
It's very frustrating that they're talking about reimagining this and having more edgy stuff. They've also said they're gonna keep it PG, but be more edgy. Like, what the fuck does that mean?
What happened to the third hour?
I feel like part of it, too, is like, okay, so if you're saying you're gonna be edgier, but you're gonna be PG, and you're specifically calling out that you're not doing more blood, what does edgier mean? Does it mean fuck these women? Because that's kind of what it feels like. It kind of feels like we're returning to this, like, shock and awe, women being treated like weird objects in many ways. And that's edgy. Like, yeah, it's edgy because it's garbage. Like, sharp garbage is still garbage. Like, I don't...
I mean, Natty and Becky didn't have a match. They fought backstage. I didn't think... I know some people said it looked like a catfight. I didn't think it looked like... Like, one of them were like... punch the other one, and they were like having a backstage brawl. It was a backstage brawl. I think it's actually pretty pejorative to say it was a catfight just because you're mad that it didn't happen in the ring. It was a backstage brawl, and it was a legitimate backstage brawl. Should they have like had matches and like done better shit with the women? Yeah, but they also didn't do dick for the men on that show either. Barely anything wrestling happened.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's
it was
a really
just
good point.
A bunch of disjointed fucking stupid segments. The thing with like RVD, right? So like Sammy's having this match. Sammy comes out and is like, this is fucking stupid. And we're like, yeah, correct, Sammy. And then he wrestles, you know, he throws shade on the legends and he wrestles Rey Mysterio. And then as he tries to leave, four legends come out. But legends that don't even like make sense together. It's Kurt Angle, Sergeant Slaughter, RVD, and... See, I can't even fucking remember. And another fucking random person that was just standing there. And I was like, you guys, this doesn't even make sense. Not like you guys are stable. You guys are just standing there to be like, hey, they told us show up and that they would give us money. So we did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was such a mess. I mean, I think the only thing that was fun on Raw is that they did a lot of stuff with the 24/7 title. Yeah,
which I think is interesting.
Kelly Kelly's first woman to hold that. But then Kelly Kelly held it. And then... Fuck, I can't remember. Candice Michelle held it, I think, and then Medusa.
Didn't Melina also hold it?
No, Melina was the ref.
Oh, that's right. She said she had been secretly training.
That Melina was invited back.
Well.
Medusa had her, or Alundra Blaze, whatever, had her, like, I'm going to throw this in the trash moment. Yeah. Ted DiBiase bought it from her, like.
Which is really interesting because they have said in the past that when Ted DiBiase bought the title from Andre the Giant, that it wasn't a legitimate title reign, but now they acknowledge him as a 24/7 champion because he bought the belt, which retroactively makes him an actual world champion because they're implying that it's okay.
But they're
that
not going to update their books.
Well, I mean, they probably won't. But it's really interesting as like a fan who like keeps track of that shit. Yeah. That like that is kind of cool. It's like a nice full circle, like a long con that because I love Ted DiBiase, I'm like, I'm glad that you got to have this.
He aged not well.
I mean, he's an old goddamn man. Jesus can't save you from that.
Yeah. He used to have beautiful hair.
Not all men get to keep their hair.
He still has some. He just doesn't. He looks like, when I say aged not well, like, he doesn't look like the same person to me.
Yeah, I can see
where,
that.
Where, like, Ric Flair still looks like
he
Ric Flair.
He was already a man in his, like, late 30s and early 40s.
He was already a man.
He was already a man.
Yeah, and I don't know. R-Truth accidentally kidnapped Drake Maverick's wife.
She and they consummated their marriage?
No, because R-Truth kidnapped her.
Sophisticated product.
Sophisticated product.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that reunion show.
I just don't understand. It was literally just for ratings, right? Like there was
yeah,
no-
and I mean, they got 3.09 million viewers. But that's not sustainable.
No, yeah. What's it going to be next week? Are they going to have a 50%
Stone Cold came
drop?
Out and just like randomly talked for a little bit.
People were upset that he didn't do a stunner.
He can't do that stuff, guys.
His neck is fucked up. He can't be slamming his spine into the ground. Like, that's not... People think like, oh, he's not doing a back bump, so that means his back's okay. No, bitch. You're hitting your tailbone on the ground and then a human's head on your shoulder. Like, it's going to fuck your spine up. Was there something that stands out as like, this is something I really liked?
I like seeing Caitlyn.
Okay, that's good. That's something. That's better than nothing.
I liked that Foxy was there, who was apparently...
Is she retired?
Retired now? I don't know.
That's weird. I feel like this should have made a bigger deal
yeah,
out of that.
Yeah, it feels weird.
She was just wrestling, like, really recently, too.
Yeah, but she was hilarious and great, as she always is.
Good.
Sammy coming out and being like, this is dumb. Fuck all of this was great.
Mm-hmm. I like that he tweeted about it afterwards too. I'm like, it's so weird to read that shit and be like, but like, I know that you're serious, but also like, cool.
Doing great heel work, bud. Yeah. Wink.
Wink.
Wink. Yeah, it sucked me. And a bunch of people were like, where was The Undertaker? It's like, bitch, you see him all the time.
He's around all the fucking time. Why do you need
He's
to
practically
see him?
On the fucking roster.
Yeah, for real. He was on the last pay-per-view.
Shut up. You don't need to see him.
I don't need 18 minutes to go to his goddamn entrance. We're not... It's fine. We just did this.
Oh, Bray Wyatt doing the mandible claw on Mick Foley
oh,
was
yeah.
great.
Dude,
That was genuinely great. Because you think Mick Foley's definitely going to win the 24/7 title, right? Like, he even made a joke about it. And then Bray Wyatt comes out and doesn't hit him with a Sister Abigail, fucking mandible claws him. Legitimately cool as hell.
I fucking love what Bray is doing.
Can't wait for them to ruin it. That's where I am as, like, a wrestling fan. It's just like, can't wait for this to get ruined.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't wait for this thing that I like to get ruined.
Did you see the photo of the Elite as the original people from one of the Bucks tweeted it was like the originals, and it was them in like corporate suit gear. Wink. Have you seen this photo?
No, but because the club has started calling themselves the OC, and now everybody's making like hilarious jokes. I can't wait for them to do a like what you say.
I wish. No one in that writer's room is good. Jimmy Jacobs isn't there anymore. He's the only person that I trust to successfully make that fucking joke.
What you say? Say that. But you need to, like, do... The Young Bucks need to do it being the Elite.
Yeah, that's how it needs to be, for sure.
What you say? Oh, did you only meant well? Well, of course you did. What you say?
Kenny's making a hilarious face of, oh no. And one of the Bucks is wearing an open cart... collared shirt with no tie and sneakers, and everyone else is dressed up like they're going to work. It's very weird. It is a very weird photo.
Well, they're weird. They're weird.
Yeah, they are weird. You're right.
They're weird.
You're fucking right.
All right. SmackDown was pretty okay. Except for Mandy Rose and Sonya had a terrible backstage segment where it sounded like Mandy Rose had fucking marbles in her mouth and forgot her script, and then they kind of just stared at each other and were like, ha 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 ha. It was awkward as hell. And then they, like, tried to make it gay, and then it just felt weird because they fucked up their lines so much. It was truly, and not, it wasn't, like, a bad segment in the, like, sometimes things get written and are really, really bad. It was a bad segment in, like, these performers really dropped the ball.
Yeah.
It was not good. Ugh. Kevin Owens continues to be a fucking delight, as does Kofi Kingston. It will be interesting to see how the Randy Orton Kingston thing plays out. Because, like, Randy Orton's, like, when he was like, oh, so you think I used my influence to ruin your career? You're damn fucking right I did. Like, Randy Orton, if he's going to be there, he should be a fucking heel. And, like, yeah. This makes sense. This is, like, I don't like Randy Orton. Am I afraid that he's going to win? Of course I am. But also, this is an interesting story to tell because there is history and there mm-hmm. is that stuff. And, like,
yeah.
it feels like a big enough match to be a SummerSlam match, right? Like, yeah. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I like, too, that it's... There are things that you can acknowledge in the current contemporary time that we exist in wrestling. Like, we were talking before, during our friendship time, about... This is probably what it was like during the Monday Night Wars, where there's just so much petty bullshit that's going on, and like the quarterly calls and people throwing shade at each other and doing all this bullshit. But we just live in a time where all of that is accessible. And I think that's truly the problem, where, like, sure, it makes great fodder for us as a podcast of people who talk about this, like, we need this
reluctantly.
Yeah, but like, when, even in the beginning, like, you need this supplemental material, otherwise what are you really doing other than a recap show? And so that's part of what makes wrestling today very interesting and very different, is that we have this, like, huge access to all this information. But watching this, like, corporate petty squabbling, it's not being presented in the way that Monday Night Wars has been presented to us in the past, of like, we made these decisions and we moved on this and they made these mistakes, but we did that. Everything worked. And, like, now we're really getting to see, like, there is some petty fucking shit that we're all having to watch now. And, like, I don't like it. It's very weird. It's like, this is what appealed to me about wrestling when I got back into it, is this, like, backstage knowledge and shit. And now I'm just like, wow, I just really want to just enjoy wrestling again. Like, this is fucking awful to watch you be children at each other as full-grown fucking adults. Like, it's, I don't know. Like, I thought I was going to like this more, and I don't, in a way that is really surprising to me that I'm not enjoying this pettiness. Like, I really thought I was going to, and I don't. And it will...
It's not fun pettiness, it's just pettiness.
Exactly, and, like, maybe it will change once we have a television product.
Totally unrelated. I forgot about a hilarious and confusing thing that happened at Raw. Charlie was backstage doing an interview, and then the Godfather's music hit, and she was so excited to be with the Godfather, and, like... was like, yeah, woo, Ho Train. And I was like, why are you so excited to see The Godfather, Charlie? Chuck. Renee goes, wow, Chuck. Wow. Hilarious. I just had to talk about that.
You know, this is totally unconnected from anything we've been talking about, but I'm glad it seems like Renee is still really thriving, even inside of
Renee
an environment
thrives.
That is probably very difficult right now. Like, I'm glad she's seems to be still really busting ass and working as hard as she can. I like that a lot.
Ember was wrestling Charlotte, and then Bailey came out to, like, be, like, the supportive champ, and then it fucked with Charlotte's attention, so then Ember got the roll-up on Charlotte. So Ember pinned Charlotte, and then
amazing
took out Charlotte and took out Bailey, and it was fucking great. Good. And it wasn't, like, a heel move. It was more like Ember being like, I did not come to play. You gave me a title shot, and I'm fucking coming for your title. And then Charlotte had a little temper tantrum backstage when she was like, how come I'm not on SummerSlam? I'm the fucking queen. What is happening? And there are rumors, I don't know how substantiated they are, but there are rumors that it's going to be Charlotte and Trish Stratus.
Oh, I had heard rumors that Trish Stratus is coming back. I had also heard some rumors that Lita might come back, and that might be the women's tag champ match for SummerSlam.
Yeah, I mean, that would be cool too, but, it, you know... Also,
I want it to be something that moves the storyline forward.
Yeah, I would rather that be like the Iconics and the Kabuki Warriors. Yeah. And I would rather just see an exhibition match between Charlotte and Trish.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
I fully agree with that. But I don't have faith in WWE as a company to only keep Trish by herself.
Also, Miz and Mrs. is back.
Yeah, it is.
And it's great. And I love it.
They're
and it's
so
the best
good.
Show.
They're so smart.
All the Xavier Woods on Miz and Miss, I was like, yes, my demographic. More Xavier Woods. More of this.
Yes, absolutely.
Tyler Breeze? Yes, please.
Fucking 1,000%.
Maurice is the best.
Maurice rules.
So does Miz. I love that show. That show's perfect.
They're so fucking smart, too, that they're like, hey, you know what I started out as? A reality star. And you know what I'm going to end as? A motherfucking reality star.
In charge of my own show.
Exactly. They're so fucking smart. Like, they watched The Bellas and were like, bitch, I can do better than that.
And they are not incorrect.
Their
show is better.
30 minutes, highly structured. Bitch, get it. Like, truly
it's a reality sitcom and it fucks.
Yeah, it fucks. Totally. 100%. And, like, I love that they're building their family. And, like, we get to see that they're building their family. It's such smart television. And, like, yeah, bitch, get paid while you're pregnant. Like, that's so smart. It's so smart to have crews who are constantly around and ready for an emergency also. Because it's good television. But also, then you have a crew of people ready to take care of an emergency. Like, that shit's real smart. And it fucks. They, Miz and Maurice fuck. Clearly, both physically, IRL, and also, like, as a metaphor for life. They fuck.
For life.
For life!
All right. Done wrestling?
Yeah, sure.
Great. We have two questions. This one is...
That's so fast!
I'm done.
Done.
This one is from Joe. This one is a little old, from July 15th, so we probably should have read it last week. Whoops, sorry. Hey, demigods. AEW-wise, as I was watching Fight for the Fallen, I realized I just did not care about any of the Being the Elite Guys matches. Did y'all have similar feeling? Matches felt like there were no stakes, and it didn't matter who won or lost in those cases, despite their constant claim that they matter. Like, of the 8 matches, I watched the buy-in stuff, and the women's match, and the 3-way tag, and then I realized I can stop now. Or is this just the case of feeling like a B-show and they didn't have any must-see feel?
I think it's a little bit of both, honestly. I think it's a B-show feel for sure because it's this free Bleacher Report show and it's they are not marketing those in the same way that they marketed All In, Double or Nothing, All Out, obviously. And like we've talked about before that really has pulled us out, that it's like you guys aren't treating this like it's an important show and so we don't feel like it's must-watch TV. I think that's part of it. I agree, though, that I think part of it is that I did the same thing. The first, like, couple of corporate guys won, and it was like, oh, I see. We're in a full-ass showcase of these dudes. So I think that is part of it, is that it has this very low-stakes feel. There feels like this inevitability that the Elite and Elite-associated guys are going to win, and I truly don't understand why, but that's not true. I don't truly understand why, because I do kind of understand why, that for people who are coming in blind, who have not really watched this product before, and you're watching it to figure out, am I into this? am I into this? Am I not into this? I can see how we're trying to draw your eye to these are the important people we should be watching. I get that. I do. It's weird because I understand on a fundamental level their audience primarily right now because they don't have television is people who are already familiar with them. But their goal is, once they have television, to have a lot of new viewers, to have a lot of new people moving in and who have never experienced this. So I understand why they want to showcase these guys are the ones who are, quote unquote, really important inside of this company. So I'm really torn about it because as a free show, I think it's very smart that they're pushing forward of these are the people you want to be watching because we're going to put a lot of emphasis on them. But it also makes me nervous that we don't know what their television looks like. And so we don't know how they're going to be pushing these guys. We don't know what this storyline is. And so I feel very two sides about it. I think that it did pull me out as someone who is very familiar with them and who doesn't think that they need to win all these matches. But for a free product for an upcoming television show, I totally understand why their focus is we need to highlight these guys that people may not know are the ones that we're supposed to be watching. So I'm really, I feel a lot of reactionary things about AEW. I feel a lot of very reactionary things of, man, I wish you guys were doing this differently. Man, I wish this was different. But it's very hard to pull backwards onto a, what would I feel if I didn't fucking know who any of these people are? What would I feel if someone was like, are you tired of WWE? Here's a free show you can watch to decide. I get that. I get that they want people to be refocused in that direction. But it is very difficult that they're relying heavily on an already established audience and then yet pushing it in a way that feels like you are a new person. We need to establish this. So I'm trying really hard to keep an open mind about the fact that, like, I know television is coming. We have a date now. We have a time. We have a network. We know what's going to fucking happen with this. And I feel like we've just been kind of ambling towards that. And so, yes, I agree. It is hard to watch this stuff knowing, man, they should not be the guys who are always getting this fucking shit. But it's new. I think we kind of have to start watching it in a way that's like, what if I was watching this with fresh eyes? What if I didn't know who the fuck these dudes were? So I think that that is a good way to also go into it, where it's like, I feel these very hard reservations, but maybe if we recontextualize it and think of it as these are fans who have split away and are tired of wrestling. These are fans who have split away and are tired of the shitty writing. I can see how they're drawn to that. I can see how they're drawn to the elite and the corporate guys being the ones that get a lot of wins and are being pushed in this way. If it continues to happen every motherfucking pay-per-view, it will be a fucking problem. Right now, it feels like a problem because I'm a mark and I'm really invested and I'm a smark who knows a lot of shit. But I think if you view it as fresh eyes to this product, it's really not as egregious as it feels in this moment. And if it continues, yes, it will be egregious. But right now, it's, we just have to separate. That's really all it is. We as fans who know a lot have to separate from the idea of this is a building product. And yes, we can be critical. And that's important that we be critical because that feedback is essential to this process going forward. But it is really frustrating as someone who watches a lot of wrestling to feel like, man, I wish you refocused. Man, I wish you were doing something different. But I get it. So I feel very both ways about this. And I'm trying really hard in this time where I feel very demoralized and beat down and burnt out by wrestling to remember there are fresh eyes on everything. And like, I've explained to so many people that AEW is a company that exists and is now being a force against WWE. And I'm thinking of those people seeking this stuff out. And so I'm trying to be a little more chill about it. And we talked too, again, during friendship time, very extensive friendship time this week, that there, it especially felt this week that there was this real vitriol online of, if you're not all in on AEW, that means that you are a mark for WWE. And if you're a WWE person, then that means that all you want to talk about is the bad stuff with AEW. I think we're just conditioned by WWE to only look for bad shit, and we're only conditioned to look for things that are very irritating, and it's hard to separate and think, this is new, and it's growing, and it's not great in many ways, but it's at least different, and I'm okay with that for now. If we get 8 weeks into television and we're still seeing this shit, it's a much bigger problem. Did you see the stuff that Brandy said too? I don't remember the names of everyone, so you're gonna have to do a little bit of Googling, listeners, sorry, but someone was talking about, like, I don't want this person in the dressing room because they're a man. And it was very transphobic. And Brandy responded in a way that was like, your language is unacceptable. We don't give a fuck. And the problem is you, and it's not that we're doing these other things. And so I really appreciated that AEW, like we've talked about before, it's really important right now as this company that's establishing itself to stand up for the people who are in their company and really make rules about if you're a piece of shit, you're not allowed to be at our shows. And so this was a really good backup in that sense too, where it's people attacking the idea of these wrestlers shouldn't be allowed here and the company standing by. We hired these people. It's important that they're part of this. We would much rather that these individuals be part of our locker room as opposed to we're only looking for 5'4 blondes. And so it's kind of a pot shot in the way that they're like, this is what WWE is looking for. And it's really obvious, but it's also nice to hear people in that corporate seat say, no, fuck you for saying this about our performers. They belong here. You are the problem and you will not be invited to be part of our show. And so, like I said, it's really easy to look for the bad shit, and it's really easy to be conditioned by WWE to look for the stuff that needs criticism. That is something that I saw this week that I was like, okay, this is, I don't love everything about Brandy. I don't think she's the perfect person to be their brand marketing person, but this is a good move in her direction. And it's really smart that they're listening enough to know these are the optics we at least need to be putting forward, even if we're not fully understanding and committed to these. Not to say that they're not, but like, even if it is just for optic reasons, it's really nice to see that they're moving in this direction. So it's some positive with some not positive. Like, that's fucking wrestling. That's how it goddamn works. But I'm hopeful, at least. And like, even if I have criticism of AEW, I'm excited and I will watch their programming. And like, Michael and Devin and I already have, like, we figured out what our schedule is going to look, so we can all watch it together on Wednesday nights and have this, like, group part of it, which we used to do for Raw and don't anymore because Michael and I are boycotting. Like, it's really nice to feel like we have other options moving forward, and, like, that feels tangible now in a way that hasn't in ever, kind of. Like, in the time that we have been talking critically about wrestling, there has not been another major option. And so this feels like tangible in a way that's very exciting. Even if I still have a lot of like, oh, I'm very concerned. Like, that's fine. That's okay if I'm concerned. I'm just happy it exists.
Another question from Joe from this week. So I saw today, Monday the 22nd, that a match at AEW's All Out was announced, a ladder match between the Young Bucks and the Lucha Bros for the AAA tag team titles. But also on the same show, there is a tag match between Dark Order and Best Friends for a first round buy-in in the upcoming tag team tournament for the AEW tag titles. If we know AEW is going to have their own tag team titles, why should we care about who holds the AAA tag team titles?
That's a fucking great question. And also, I feel like the Lucha Brothers are definitely going to win because they lost last one. Like,
I think the play here is to have the Lucha Brothers win it back.
Yes, definitely.
And then by the next time they have a pay-per-view, they'll have their own tag team titles established. They're doing this match because they don't have
an
established title, and they think that matches need to have titles attached to them, I think.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Also, they know that Young Bucks and the Lucha Brothers are names and draws, and people go to shows for those people.
And also, the Young Bucks won those belts from the Lucha Brothers on a AAA show, and so it makes sense that they would prioritize having the Lucha Brothers win them back on an AEW show, because it gives this prestige to those belts, like, we defend these in different places, people come here and do this, they have their own company, we win it back at their company. Like, I think that that's part of what's important of it. And honestly, the reason we should care about it is because it'll be a good match. Have we seen this match 1,000 times? Maybe, that's fine. But also, like, again, you have to view it with fresh eyes. Imagine being a person who's only ever seen Fight for the Fallen and Fighter Fest, and then goes in and sees All Out and gets to see this dope-ass ladder match. Like, I think it makes a huge world of difference that they, even if it is only the only, quote-unquote, I don't mean to diminish the AAA titles, but if it is on an AEW show, only those belts, it does at least help to establish our tag division is dope, and we can do these fucking awesome matches. And then you get to see whoever loses that essentially probably takes over against the first contender spot for the AEW belt, because assumingly, the Lucha Bros will defend the AAA titles elsewhere, and so the Young Bucks will move up into the contendership for their own company's belt. I hope they don't win it first. I think that's something that will be interesting moving forward is, okay, you're introducing these new belts. Who are your company people that you're saying get to hold these first? And, like, if they are committed to fully giving all of those belts to company-made people first, that's a problem. And, like, I really hope they don't go in that direction. I think that's a really bad move on their part. But I can see how they would do that because they think it'll draw people in. And so I think that the reason this match will be the most interesting is to see what are we looking at going forward for their tag division. I think that this is going to set that tone in a way that we've seen a little because we've gotten to see their tag division. But we haven't really seen, again, we don't have TV. We don't know what this stuff is going to look like moving forward. And so I think this is a good way to hook in people who are like, but what will happen with the AEW tag belts? There are these contenders, and now these people have these other belts. So I think it's interesting, and I think it's smart overall storytelling. I just think they need to execute it properly.
Uh-huh.
You don't give a fuck about wrestling this week. Man, you just let me talk for like 20 fucking minutes.
Like literally 20
minutes. I'm aware. You just checked out. I could see it in your face. I was like, well, I guess I'll keep talking.
I listened.
For once, I'm informed about shit. I'm like, I'm ready.
Good. Somebody has to talk about wrestling.
Oh. Do we have other wrestling to talk about? No more questions?
No.
Nope. No? Okay, great. We still haven't done a fan casting of wrestlers as Battlestar Galactica. We should do that soon.
Not today.
Well, duh. Obviously, we wasted time with friendship time.
You can find us on the internet.
I'm at Urgency on Twitter or NYDUrgency on Instagram.
I'm at Stella_Cheeks.
You can send us an email.
Nope, you have to use our hashtag, #NotYourDemoPod.
I mean, you could have done that after the email.
To interact with us online and whatnot.
Use our hashtag. Also, you can send us an email.
Use our hashtag.
At NotYourDemoPod@gmail.com. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, Apple Music. Sure. I don't know what the fuck it's called now. I don't use that product. But you can do that. You should do that. We haven't a review in a minute. We would like one. That would be very nice.
We would like one.
We would like one. That would be very nice.
You can buy our merch at whatamaneuver.net.
Hey, you can subscribe to our Patreon, which has all kinds of good shit.
What a Maneuver, Patreon, Twitter.
I feel like we're missing something. It doesn't matter. Who cares? Mark out?
Fuck off.
That was the right way to go over that one. Bye.
Oh my god, where is the joy? Free mom! If there was a lot of noise on the microphone, it's because my cat jumped on the table.
And another cat is purring extraordinarily loud.
No, that's beautiful background noise.
I mean, it's still loud.
That's my purring baby. That's my baby. I wonder if you can hear it.
I can hear it from across the table. You can definitely hear it.
He's got a loud, manly, powerful purr. He's such a handsome boy. Oh. My cat is handsome.
Was there anything you particularly enjoyed from the Raw reunion?